Hello and welcome to MLW Confusion. I'm your host, Rob Cameron, bringing all that you may or may not need to know about Major League Wrestling and its television programming. This week, we are going to take a look at the ups and downs of Kings of Coliseum, but first, let's talk about the news. This week's news is pretty much brought to you by Super Fight 2024. That will be February 3rd at the 2300 Arena. Tickets are available now. I don't know what their availability actually is at this point, but they're out. I haven't heard anything about a sellout yet, so go get your tickets while you can if you're in the Philadelphia area. We have two big matches that have been announced for the week so far. Of course, there'll be a lot more to come, but they've gotten two huge matches announced for the show. The first of which is the former and current Mystico is going to debut for MLW as he takes on hated rival Averno. Averno is being represented by Promociones Dorada. Mystico is being brought in by a mysterious benefactor whom Selena doesn't know about. But Mystico and Averno have battled numerous times over the course of the years in CMLL. And so MLW is looking to add another chapter to that rivalry in a special Lucha Expedition. Exhibition. There we go. We're starting things off here with poor grammar and incorrect words. Lucha Exhibition. Though, I guess if you're going to Philly, that's technically a Lucha Expedition. I don't know. I'm reaching at this point, ladies and gentlemen. Bear with me on it. Also announced at well, Kings of Coliseum, spoiler alert on that one. The World Heavyweight Championship will be defended as Satoshi Kojima, Bread Club member number one, is going to be taking on Alex Kane for the World Heavyweight Championship. Of course, Kojima is the first recognized MLW champion, and Kane, well, he is the current champion, Bomaye Fight Club. But we're having our own different Fight Club, as it has also been announced that CMML representative Shigeo Okamura, I hope I got that right. Please forgive me. I didn't do a whole lot of research into this, just the barest of bare minimums, and that didn't involve watching any matches. But Okamura will serve as Kojima's cornerman for the fight. Okamura is a longstanding member of the CMML roster with over 30 years of experience from my limited research, even holding their trios title with Hiroshi Tanahashi and Taichi, which I assume is during their earlier days during Excursion. But either way, we've gotten an extra wrinkle in the CMML New Japan MLW relationship, so it looks to be kind of a three-way battle going on right there involving the World Heavyweight Championship. And the other bit hasn't been announced, but I just think it's kind of curious, and I'm going to take a moment to wildly speculate, because that's what we do here on the internet, ladies and gentlemen. We speculate wildly, especially if you're behind a microphone and you have yourself a neckbeard. And, well, shucky darns, I got both those things. So, it looks like Fusion is going to be done for the time being. I don't know if when that's going to be up. I know there's no episode tonight, despite them making tapings, making matches for tapings, though they've also noted that some of these matches that they previously announced for the Fusion tapings as part of Kings of Coliseum are going to be part of the Reload event on YouTube. So it looks like MLW is going to do away with their weekly television for the time being and have major events twice a month, bi-weekly, if you will, with a large event being on Triller TV, the former Fight TV, and then a separate live event for free on YouTube and BN Sports. And I definitely have, mixed feelings about that, because one, on the positive, it looks, you got yourself, you can get yourself a kind of a big fight feel by doing these larger scale events. But on the flip side, on the negative, and this goes more towards how MLW runs things, but MLW isn't always the best at promoting things when there isn't weekly television. Yes, they're going to be doing a little bit better because there is a defined schedule of at least monthly events, and now, you know, a bigger event every other week. But, they're not always good at hyping things well and adding, like, new, like, storyline developments when there isn't a TV program going on. Like, right now they're not at the stages they were before, like, 6 months ago, 8 months ago, where they basically just said, oh, it's the off season, and we got practically radio silence out of the deal. It hasn't been quite like that, but they still haven't been, you know, they haven't been batting a thousand with that one, though they've done a touch better with releasing certain things, kind of like the weigh-in between Richard Holiday and Alex Kane, et cetera. So it looks like for the time being, it looks like Fusion is still on hiatus, but instead we're going to have a kind of a pay-per-view style event and then a large event every other week rather than just doing the weekly format. Is it a good idea? I mean, I think that's just going to be up to opinion, really. And execution. I mean, we will see how it goes. But I personally am just not a fan of it. But this one, I'm going to allow for some subjectivity. So there we go. That's our news for the week. Let's take a brief pause for the cause, get an energy drink, and then we'll have Kings of Colosseum coming up next. If you're like me, sometimes you need a pick-me-up to get you through the day. I drink Raise Energy for that pickup. Raise comes in a bunch of different flavors, and more recently Italian Ice, which is great, by the way. And it contains no sugar, so there's no crash after you drink it. And really, like, best of all, if you go through me and go to wetrepsports.com, use my code CASS, you get 15% off your order. So, also, be like CASS, drink Raise Energy. All right, it is time for Kingdom of Colosseum, and we're going to start things off with an intro package and some weird, awkward camera work where I don't think production is ready to shoot to things, because we have Joe Dombrowski and Matt Stryker just kind of looking lovingly at the camera before, like, going up to, like, Tron stuff and crowd shots, and I don't think we're ready to start the party. But, you know, I'm ready to start the party now, so let's have it. First match of the night, Wasted Youth and Alec Price takes on the ne'er-do-wells of Tony Deppen, TJ Crawford, and Griffin McCoy. We are going to start 2024 off with a crash as the Technico team of Wasted Youth and Alec Price go diving through the ropes into the heel squadron. We do eventually get into the ring to start the match off proper with TJ Crawford and, a quick tag version of Wasted Youth in the ring. Quick tags for the babyfaces as the heels eventually come in but get sent out of the ring. But in the process of getting sent out of the ring, they trip up everybody as they're going for their dives, eventually isolating Marcus Mathers in the ring with TJ Crawford. Deppen is tagged in and dicks around before and goes to, like, the ring apron where it would be the face side of the ring. Mathers then tags in Deppen, and Deppen's like, you stupid little child, and kicks him in the face. It was actually kind of funny. We need more spots like that in wrestling. However, after some shenanigans on the heel side, Mathers causes a malfunction at the junction. Deppen gets speared, tags in Alec Price. Diving leg lariat gets a two count from Price. Deppen is in and fouls Youth, and we just get this, like, really ugly triple powerbomb kind of thing on McKay. It only gets a two count because it was rather ugly. Yeah. Anyway, so we get some more tandem offense by the heels on McKay. Another two count. Just refs not even trying at this point to, like, keep things under control, one in and one out, whatnot. However, McKay fires up and everyone starts getting their stuff in. Price is tagged in officially, get a big double Doomsday Blockbuster. We get, like, a mushroom stomp into a jumping DDT, where Price jumps off the turnbuckle onto TJ Crawford, and then on to Griffin, who gets the swinging DDT, and that was nifty. This leads to Crawford being rather confused by this turn of events, allowing Western Youth to hit their variation of more bang for your buck, aka Youth Gone Wild, on Crawford to get the win. And yeah, this is the definition of like a strong opener. Like, there was a lot of action, a lot of stuff to keep the crowd entertained. Commentary really put over like all the stuff, like specifically Alec Price did to go viral. Like, they kept throwing it out there, Alec Price and having viral moments. And like, you know, it's not totally untrue, but I feel like if you're gonna say stuff like this and if people are paying attention, you're going to get that little anti-rub where like, yeah, the kid's doing cool things, but like, but when your dad is the one telling everyone that your kid's doing cool things, like, it magically can become uncool, and I'm worried that's gonna happen. But like, really, like, it's amazing. So we'll just like ignore the sound bites and just gif Price, you know, mushroom stomps into DETs and whatnot. It'll be fun. But yeah, really fun match, I thought. You know, it made, you know, Deppin's a slam ball in the best way, so it worked for him. I kind of, like, at a certain level, would have liked to see them get the win, just to make sure, you know, kind of help solidify the heels as a heel faction, because that's one thing, like, MLW kind of has problems with at times, is, like, following up big bads and trying to, like, make them, keep them looking strong. But, like, let's face it, Deppin's a weasel, and his buddies are now weasels by proxy, so, you know, they're not going to be, you know, terribly hurt by the loss. And also, Wasted Youth are the number one contenders for the tag team champions championship at this time as well, so they needed a big win as well. So yeah, ultimately, like, if I can nitpick, I'll make complaints, but really, big picture, there was nothing wrong with this match. A lot of fun to be had. Backstage, Zeta Steel wants the inside scoop on the Beaumier Fight Club. She bickers with Mr. Thomas, gets a sidekick joke in there, as Mr. Thomas gets a Ho Island joke, because those are things. Howard Kane comes out, and he talks about how his pretty arms are going to squeeze the life out of Richard Holiday, and that's on Beaumier. We follow this up with a hype video for the Taipei death match. That's right, the calling continues to implode as Ricky Shampage defends the National Openweight Championship against Akira in a Taipei death match. For those of you not in the know, that is based on Bloodsport, where you get your fists taped, dipped in glue, then dipped in shards of broken glass, and you just punch each other quite a bit. Also made famous in America by the Bad Breed, Ian and Axel Rotten, when they broke up. Their feud culminated in variations of the Taipei deathmatch itself as well. Anywho, but that match is not next. What we do have is a match for the Featherweight Championship as Jinai Kai defends against TJPW's Hyper Masao. So let's talk about this here match. We got Graps. Masao is the superior Graps person in this situation. She does ask for respect, a clean fight from Kai, and Kai just kicks her foot away. That did not make Hyper Masao happy, and for her efforts, Jinai Kai gets put in a pendulum, then follow that up by a surfboard. We then note, just FYI, that there are lucha henchmen surrounding the entryway, or at least guarding it. I don't know, one on each side. They are non-verbal, non-moving reminders of the past right here, now in the present. Anyway, back in the ring, Kai comes back, gets her kick demon stuff in, big roundhouse kick to the chest, only gets two. They go outside, and Hyper Masao takes like 30 minutes to get her bike started, because part of her gimmick is to do stuff on a bicycle, she's got a bicycle! And sometimes it's like a joust, sometimes she clotheslines. But it took like 30 minutes to get that bike up and going, which is weird because it's not a motor-powered bike. It is just a regular bicycle, if you will. But gets to ride around the ring, hits Kai with a clothesline in the process. Diving crossbody in the ring only gets two before she locks in the crossface chicken wing, and it really looks gnarly, and that Kai is in an awful lot of trouble. However, Selena De La Renta hops up on the ring apron and offers a distraction that goes kind of awry. It goes awry in the fact that Selena didn't get to throw her magic cocaine at Hyper Masao because Masao had her own little neutralizing cold spray to spray in Selena's face. However, the distraction was successful in the fact that it distracted Hyper Masao, allowing Kai to hit a big roundhouse kick and the demon lock, which means Hyper Masao had no choice but to tap. So your winner and still MLW Featherweight Champion Jinai Kai with the rest of Promociones Dorada. The one thing I have to say about this match is that, like, I feel like the lack of build really hurt it. Like, it didn't, like, yes, they promoted the match, but, like, the match itself really didn't have any build to it. So it never really felt like Kai was in danger of losing the championship, and that this was kind of a glorified exhibition match. And on one hand, like, that can be cool. That's how dream matches are ultimately made. Excuse me. But on the flip side, this is a championship match, and part of the appeal of championship contests is, like, the threat of the champion losing the belt. And, like, that never really felt like it was going to be a thing. At least in terms of how, like, we'll call it the atmosphere quality of the match. Like, yeah, the crossface chicken wing spot, like, there might have been a modicum of doubt in there. But, like, as a whole, like, I know I didn't. I won't speak for you guys, but I didn't actually think Kai was going to lose this match. Like, I felt like this was just kind of one of those, like, we're putting the title on the line because the champion is in the match. But really, this is just a dream match, which is, like, two in a row for Kai, and I feel like that's kind of hurting Kai's reign a little bit. Not that there was anything wrong in this particular match, it just otherwise, like, fell flat. Like, it just didn't feel like a championship match, and a match worthy of the championship. But again, like, that doesn't mean anything was wrong with the match. It wasn't like it was a botch fest or, like, they didn't click or anything. I've just felt it's one of those things, like, since there was no build, there was no investment to be had. And with no investment, there's no reward. But that is going to be the worst thing I say about this match. And actually, that's kind of damning in a way. But whatever, I said it. There's no take backs now because it's on the internet. And once it's on the internet, it's there forever. Speaking of here forever, Ricky Shane Page has a promo hyping up the Taipei Death Match. He's going to beat Akira, sit on the throne of Carcosa, etc., etc., etc. Blood, sacrifice, Ricky Shane Page. Gotcha. That leads us to our next match, second title match of this here evening, as Tom Lawler and Josh Bishop of the World Titan Federation take on the Second Gear crew represented by the one called Manders and Matthew Justice. The Second Gear crew, of course, are the champions, and they've been having issues with the WTF. Bishop and Justice specifically have been going back and forth with various high spots and tables and dives and Matthew Justice stuff. So getting another chapter of the feud here tonight. And we're going to start off hot. Very hot, like, gonna brawl all around ringside. Justice has already just thrown a chair at Bishop, so obviously, if it hasn't been readily apparent, like, there's no DQs. There's, like, no DQs in MLW anymore, I guess. I don't know. We don't announce it as such, but it just doesn't happen. So that's going on. Lawler is clotheslined by a table. Manders and Justice pick up a table and just clobber him with it. That was fun. And then Bishop just chucks a ring board and, like, dents Justice's head with the board. That was, that's CTE ready to happen right there. Justice gets a tool bag, and it doesn't happen to be Joe Dombrowski or Mr. Saint Laurent. As Bishop and Manders have a hot ass fight, like, they're just chopping the snot out of each other, like, hamburger chesting it up, just back and forth, just chop, 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 like, just literally, like, this is, like, the literal translation of big, meaty men slapping meat. And the wife will hurt me for that reference later because she hates it. And, like, Manders gets bored. He wanders off. Justice comes in, has a seat next to Bishop, and now they're just chopping each other, sitting in chairs, just casually sitting, chopping each other in the chest. However, Justice goes up top to go do Matthew Justice things. Lawler comes in out of nowhere, hits like a Kimura toss off the top rope. That was kind of nifty to see. Chops to the chest of Manders, who's already been severely chopped, machine gun style by Lawler. Bishop is now just chucking chairs at people without a care in the world. Manders fights through a bunch of chair shots because, you know, Neanderthal brains just don't register pain in the same way as everybody does, and just kind of, you know, just kind of takes a moment for it to register. He dodges a like modified concerto to get out of the way, and Justice dives on everybody because that's what Justice does. We take another half hour to just throw plunder into the ring. Justice and Manders are throwing chairs around. They eventually build like some sort of like chair board pyramid that doesn't get used forever and actually actively falls down at one point later on, just because, you know, the ring bounces with bodies flopping around. High low on Bishop only gets a two count. Too much jibba jabber in the ring allows WTF to come back, get a lariat, but Manders finally recognizes all the pain that he's been put through, can't capitalize on the pinfall. This allows Bishop to hoist Manders up and just chuck him over the ropes, powerbomb style, mostly through a table. He kind of missed it, and I kind of felt bad because, like, he hit the table enough for it to break, but dude landed hard on his shoulder in the process of that. However, I totally jumped over like the biggest spot of the match, arguably. So I apologize for that, because, you know, I'm moderately aroused by the thought of the one called Manders in pain. However, before all this happens, so we get the lariat spot. Zeta comes in and goes after Manders, goes for his eyes, hops on his back, spider monkey style. Manders dumps her off, and because evidently cowboys don't actually have a sense of chivalry, just takes her head, literally takes her head off with a lariat. Dude, just like, she practically like 360s, like she's broken a SmackDown game, and like lands like head first on like part of a ring board. So like, not only did she get like, you know, stiffed, she done landed on her head at the corner of the ring board as well. So we'll say Bishop's powerbomb is in retaliation. We will pretend that that's what happened there as I try to get my notes back in order. Well, in the meanwhile, so while I've, you know, gone off into tirade land and missed notes land, Tom Lawler's climbed up to the top rope. Justice dumps him to the arena floor, well, through a table through the floor anyway. Bishop goes to meet Justice on the top rope. However, Justice gets the better of Bishop, hoists him up into the shoulders, and hits a Death Valley driver through the table, or well, the board chair pyramid to get the win. Before I get my thoughts, also before the match is like goes away and I get my full thoughts on it, as Second Gear crew are celebrating their victory in the ring ramp, Bishop just comes in like an ape, a monk, and just destroys everyone too. So WTF gets the last word in the match, though they don't have the championship. So this match was really fun because I just dig the chaos that is like Weapon Fest. I do wish that MLW would just publicly announce that DQs aren't a thing anymore, because I don't know. Despite my, you know, knowledge of the contrary, like, I get almost disappointed when, like, nobody says, like, oh, there's no DQs. Oh, in Major League Wrestling, there's no disqualifications. And like, at best, we might get a statement saying like, oh, the ref is showing leniency because this is a title match. Like, no, like, make a decision. Just like, put it out there in the ether. Like, I really don't care if there are no DQs. Like, ECW cut their teeth and made themselves stand out by doing that. Like, I am okay with it. But the thing is like, every wrestling company needs to create and stick to their own mythos. You can't just be nebulous about things and just do whatever. It's a story, and story, and every fictional world needs a set of rules to follow, and to establish that. And I feel like in a realm of professional wrestling, you have to kind of acknowledge whether or not weapons are legal. And like, they imply it, like, they'll have like, oh, these specialty matches, it's a tables match, it's a Taipei death match. But like, it almost means nothing when a regular match can just, you know, you can tee off on people with chairs without any sort of repercussions for it. So that always that's a mixed bag for me, because I love the chaos, but on the other hand, like, announce there's going to be chaos, basically. So try that. The other thing, it kind of put me off, and I'm not just saying this because I don't want Manders to have a title anymore, but once again, WTF is choked. And spoiler alert, it's been long enough, it shouldn't be a spoiler, but spoiler alert, Richard Holiday fails in his quest for the world title tonight as well. And so, this is kind of a thing for WTF. They might do good in non-title matches, but when the title's on the line, they choke. And I feel like that is ultimately, despite the level of talent they have in that stable, it does make them come off as goobers. They're here to take over and then proceed to fail, at every opportunity that they have to actually do it. It's one thing to cause chaos, but when your story beats really need you to pick up an actual victory about things, you don't really do it. It makes you all look goobers, which makes me really sad, because I've said it before, I'll say it again, I love Tom Lawlor. He's excellent in any role he's had, but him and the rest of them have been choke artists since the debut of WTF as a whole. But otherwise, match was fun because I like that sort of chaos. That is my bag. And it looks like we're not going to get an opportunity to properly clean the ring out, because Akira just barges out. He wants his match right now. Ricochet and Paige obliges. Looks like we are getting ourselves a national openweight championship match right now. Right meow. Diddy meow. Taipei death. So everybody's been pre-dipped. Just off the bat, You will see the glass in the match. However, I would have liked him to use almost beer bottles or some colored glass to really drive home the image of the glass. Instead, it was just, regular colored glass, which, glass is clear. I get it. But I would have wanted that visual pop of, broken glass on the white tape. But, whatever. If that's my only complaint on this match, then I think that's a success, really. So Akira has a flurry of offense, but RSP cuts him off pretty quickly with a running crossbody. Akira starts is sent through a board. RSP just starts gouging him with a chunk of the board. Akira is caught gigging himself as Ricochet and Paige showboats. So you can just watch Akira in the corner just stabbing himself in the head as Ricochet and Paige is I'm the man. Who's the man? I don't think he said any of that. That's just what Hulk Hogan would do in this situation. Akira gets collared by a ring board. His head goes clear through the ring board. RSP just kicks his face off in the process. Akira tries to come back, but RSP tries to tape him to the ropes, similar to what happened last time on a Fusion. However, Akira's having none of it and hits a stalling German suplex for two, and that was impressive because RSP is a big dude. Then locks on the ankle lock, which gives RSP an opportunity to gig himself as well. Stellar camera work, guys, on this here thing. Watching guys cut themselves so they can bleed on camera. Akira throws chairs, hits a top rope meteora for two. RSP hits the Raven effect out of nowhere, but instead of going for the victory, gets a bucket of broken glass, pours that into the ring. And then in addition to that, it's not enough, so Ricochet and Paige also asks for a pane of glass to be brought in, so he makes a table on it. Akira is slammed into the glass. They build a table of the glass board as Ricochet and Paige does a senton off the top rope through the glass with Akira underneath. Great visual on that, though. That was actually pretty good camera work. you know, nothing comes of it. It's only a two count. Kira demands to be beaten. It just fires him up more, and then hits a big running Saito into the glass. Kira looks to hit the death penalty when Sammy Callahan, of all people, comes out. He hides behind Akira, does his thumbs up, thumbs down pose before hitting an even flow DDT of his own, and RSP gets the pin off of that. But we're not done there yet. So we get Akira up. He's all like, dude, and him and RSP are, you know, kind of like snarling at each other. We're not done with Callahan. Callahan takes Akira to Dick Kick City, puts a calling card in his mouth. So it looks like Callahan is a member of the calling now. So this is taking a rather unexpected turn. I don't know how much the calling imagery fits Callahan, but I do feel like him being a proper mouthpiece, it can do nothing but, like, bolster the calling. Like, they've kind of lacked some name to them. A little air of danger to them since Raven disappeared. And so now they have a guy that can talk and is willing to do crazy things. So the calling has definitely bolstered their ranks with the addition of Callahan. And then, of course, this also allows the feud with Akira to keep on rolling. Looks like we have another special big event in January. That is MLW Reload. That is going to be on January 20th. They do eventually kind of go over some of the matches for that. And it seems to basically, I don't know, and this is going to be an aside on this. Like, it almost looks like now that they're almost, it seems like they're putting, we'll find out this week, but like putting Fusion on the back burner and now doing like two big events a month. Like, they're doing the premium live event, your Fight TV event, and then instead of having Fusion, doing a large scale YouTube event like a couple weeks later. And I could be wrong on that, but like a lot of the matches announced for this, like Steph Delander versus Good Brother number three, like have been announced as part of a Fusion taping. Sami Callihan versus Satoshi Kojima, that has been announced as part of this as well, the Reload. So I don't know if they're phasing Fusion out. Like, I mean, it's cool that it's still going to be on YouTube, but I don't know. I guess we'll see. We'll see what's going on here. Like, I mean, it's going to be a net neutral. We get the matches as long as it's on a relatively, you know, as long as it's on a schedule, ultimately, like, it'll be fine. But I just think that's a kind of a curious maneuver. And so unless they got more stuff coming up on the back burner that we're not aware of yet, which is always the case, we'll just kind of have to see what happens. See what happens. Oh, accidental puns in there, because our next match is the Love is Blind Fold match between Love Doug and the notorious Brett Ryan Goslin. These two have been feuding technically over the affection of Becca. However, it turns out that it was like basically Doug has been stalking Becca. Well, he will say, you know, schoolyard crush, but really it was kind of stalkerish. And it turns out notorious BRG is Becca's boyfriend, and he kind of gave Doug the Jason Todd treatment. And so now we are going to have a Love is Blindfold match. So standard blindfold rules, you put the blindfold on and then just have a match. But yeah, so we start the match off with like mirror actions as both competitors are trying to find each other. We end with a double down off a clothesline. Doug is with the referee, and Goslin lifts up his mask to see where everybody is, then puts on a pair of brass knucks. He finds Doug, punches Doug in the face. Doug just goes flopping out of the ring and underneath. And Goslin is like, dude, where is he? He goes after the ref, and the ref starts chewing him out. Because he's like, I'm the ref. Don't touch me. I'm the ref. Which is all the more reason, I think, to punch the ref in the head with the brass knuckles. But I'm not wearing a blindfold, and I'm not BRG as well. So what do I know? BRG's in the ring just screaming his little head off. You know, Doug, where are you? Where is Doug? Where is he? And basically, causes such a commotion that Doug, like, has no problems coming back into the ring, hitting a modified Shiranui, and getting the victory. And, like, this was a fun, quick match. Like, I will say, like, blindfold matches tend not to be great. So this one being short was the right idea. So they came in, did a little bit of shtick, got out. And I definitely think that was the right choice given the nature of this here gimmick. Doug gets a win. BRG has to eat a little bit of crow, but it's blindfolded. So he has kind of an, you know, at least a visual out per se. Like, so if they have more matches, you know, this doesn't have to be the feud ender. It can just be, you know, what it was. We do get a big announcement that Mystico is debuting for MLW at Superfight. So another big name from CMLL coming in for the company. This is before our unofficial official main event, as Richard Holiday looks to obtain the World Heavyweight Championship from Alex Kane. Another match of WTF versus the Balmaier Fight Club. Kane's been a champion since August. Holiday has just come back to the company. This is his first official match back since he showed up last month as a surprise. Let's have a match. We start with Graps, but obviously when it comes to Graps, Alex Kane is one of the better grapplers in MLW. Hits a belly-to-belly suplex, follows it up with a German and a clothesline to the outside. However, Holiday takes advantage of being outside and slams Kane on the floor. Lots of shtick with the crowd. Comes in to break the count, which made me happy because too many guys don't break the count if they're going to be on the floor for bloody ever, before hitting a leg drop on the ring apron, which, if you've forgotten, that is the hardest part of the ring. Holiday cuts off a Kane comeback, hits a neck breaker to get a two count off of that. Kane, though, does get to fire up, gets a batch of suplex, the straps are down, spear, Kane maker. All this effort, though, only gets two. We get an Avalanche 2008, but Kane rolls out of the ring like a coward. Coward. So the match gets to continue. Inside, we get variations of fade to black, but Holiday keeps flipping out. He even does, like, the pinfall counter that Bret Hart did to Roddy Piper, and Kane actually ended up doing to Tom Lawler in the process. But Kane kicks out of that. Holiday comes back with a big tiger bomb, only gets two off that. Kane hits a choke slam, which I think is interesting because Kane's not that tall, and Holiday is, well, taller than Kane, but whatever. We got a choke slam, gets a two count off that. Mr. Thomas is resting on the ropes. I thought that was a bit of foreshadowing, but that was not the case. We go for fade to black again. The ref gets bumped, so we get a visual tap out by Holiday. Holiday taps out, and he's kind of dead, but there's no ref to see it. Get a low blow. Reinforcements arrive for WTF. Tom Lawler, Josh Bishop come out, and they attack Thomas. Bishop powerbombs. Kane through a table. However, inside the ring, that does not put Kane away somehow. Kane kicks out. Kane rolls Holiday up in a small package. When Holiday pops out of that, he locks in fade to black. And that is it, ladies and gentlemen. Holiday has no choice but to pass out. He gets the three-arm check. And so despite all these shenanigans, your winner and still MLW World Heavyweight Champion, Alex Kane. And I was surprised by the outcome of this, especially, like, once we got all the shenanigans in, which I felt like if the shenanigans didn't go anywhere, it just makes the match seem overbooked and kind of stupid, and kind of brought down, like, what was being a decent match as well. And then, of course, I touched on it earlier, just the fact that, you know, WTF can't seem to, really get their stuff together. you know, in championship matches, like, really, I think hurts the faction as a whole, especially if they're doing, like, a hostile takeover kind of gimmick, which they are. It's hard to take over if you're not winning the proper matches to give you proper power, and they've not done that with anybody that they've brought in, essentially. They've, you know, basically hired out an assassin in the form of Alex Hammerstone. They tried it with, you know, they tried it with Holiday now. They brought in a big gun in Josh Bishop, and just nobody's succeeding when they really need to the most. But other than that, you know, it was a good enough match. I, you know, if I was playing Armchair Booker, I would have given the title to Holiday, like, regardless of WTF or not, because I feel like Kane's reign is starting to, like, quasi, you know, starting to falter a little bit. Like, he's had the belt for, 4 months now, and that is plenty long, in my humble opinion. But, you know, I'm not going to complain too much because, you know, Kane is killing it. Kane is over with the crowd. The Beaumayes do feel like a big deal overall. But yeah, so we got that. Match, the show's not over, unfortunately. Joe Dombrowski's in the ring, and he announces that the first official, keyword official, MLW champion, Satoshi Kojima, is the new number one contender to challenge for the belt. Satoshi comes out, gets a bag of bagels, and is just chucking bagels out to the crowd. He is ecstatic because, one, he gets the challenge for the belt, and two, there is bread, and we all love bread. However, the combination of not being named number one contender for no good reason and bread makes Sami Callihan a very upset little boy. He comes to ring. He comes to curse out everybody because right now he's going to the school of DJ Hyde promos. This ultimately leads to a pull apart. And yeah, so we finally get like a storyline reason for Kojima and Callihan to be going at it here in the near future. We also go backstage where Selena De La Renta is upset that someone booked Mystico without her. So evidently Mystico being brought in was not her idea. With her is Rocky Romero, who is upset that he lost the National Historic Welterweight Championship, as well. So like, it's not been a great time, at least in that part of the, Promociones Dorada camp, but like, Selena doesn't care. Like, she wants to know who's booking luchadors without her permission and without her knowledge. Rocky's like, whatever. Like, it's fine. You have a lucha weapon on your team, hinting to be himself. And Selena's like, oh, yeah, it is. It's Averno. And Rocky's like, dude, really? So it looks like Mystico's coming in to do battle with heated rival Averno. We also get kind of a formal match card for Reloaded. That's January 20th. We get our TJPW exhibition match. Good Brother number 3 versus Steph Lander. Notorious Mimi versus Zeta. Kojima versus Callihan as well. So, you know, that's a pretty stacked card. As I said, I'm not sure if this is going to start replacing Fusion as a whole or what, but we're just going to have to wait and see. And then, of course, we have what is technically the main event, and yeah, not going to really touch it. I am going to point out that Jacob Fatu tapped out to the piece of fast food breakfast sandwich, and yeah, so they went through all this to, like, re-coronate Fatu just to have him tap out, which I think this might be like the first time he's tapped out in MLW, which upsets me greatly. Commentary was kind of cringe to go along with it. And really, like, that's going to be all I say about it, because yeah, we got ourselves a walking dumpster fire of accusations main eventing our shows, and I really don't want to be a part of it. There, said that part out loud. Not even the quiet part. I meant it. Just like I meant variations of it when I said it like 2 weeks ago when they broke the news. So that's how I'm handling it. I am being a good American and I'm pretending the problems don't exist. There we go. So, like, but I do feel like, regardless of my feelings for that individual, like, they knocked Fatu down a peg on it. Like, they went through the story of redemption for him just for him to turn around and lose. And, like, So we're not even further capitalizing on any stories we previously built just because we got a shiny new toy in the promotion. Cool beans. That being said, that is how we are properly ending the show. That is how we're ending Kings of Colosseum. It didn't quite have the punch as some of the other premium live events, Fight TV specials, whatever you want to call them, since they're not proper pay-per-views per se. However, you know, like, there was nothing inherently wrong with it. It just didn't have, I don't know, Hollywood glitz. Didn't have that pizzazz to it. I don't know if there just wasn't enough surprises, or we just didn't get enough 5-star bangers off of it, if there wasn't enough Satoshi Kojima. But, you know, it just didn't have the atmosphere of some of the other events, which ultimately is fine. You're not going to hit it out of the park every time. And overall, I feel with these events, MLW has done a very good job of keeping them hyped and putting on a very good show. And it's not like we didn't get our money's worth out of this event as well. So, you know, nothing, you know, big picture, nothing to complain about. It on paper is a very big victory. Just watching it live, though, it just kind of lacked something in this one lone neckbeard's opinion. Anywho, so yeah, we will end it on that. So we will move along to our next segment. So I did imply, well, not just implied, but just flat out said, next segment. And when I did the original recording for Kings of Colosseum, it looked like there was a potential for there possibly to be Fusion or some other, you know, broadcast or news to happen after Kings of Colosseum. And obviously that wasn't the case tonight, which is fine. You know, I talked about it at the top of the show that it looks like they're going to be every other week. We'll figure something out in the meanwhile, whether it's a reduction of schedule, ha ha ha, or a change, you know, or just a kind of a change in formatting, which is probably be the more likely scenario in here. But I wanted to take this opportunity because I feel that it'd be disingenuous not to talk about, as Matt Stryker put it, the elephant in the room. I really, really glossed over it during the review, just because, to be frank, I didn't know what to think. Like, I didn't know what to make of this situation. But I've had time to ruminate on it. I've regurgitated and swallowed it back down a bunch of times since Sunday. Well, when I did the original recording of my reaction to Kings of Colosseum, and today where I was waiting for, you know, new programming to pop up. And as I said, I think it would be a disservice to everyone, especially a disservice to myself, if I didn't talk about it, because while, you know, I, as a whole, like, I'm not going to say, like, what I do is 100% of character or anything like that, but, like, I do, you know, make light of a lot of situations, and I, you know, embellish or bring up character aspects, and it didn't feel right while doing the review proper in that mode to really talk about it. And again, I want to see what would the fallout be before I, you know, rattled on incoherently, because whereas I didn't think anything was going to solve the problem, I didn't want to be like burn the town down and then, you know, what we could be considered an appropriate action to be take place. But so enough with the vagaries, let's get it over with. So Saturday, the main event, as I said, like, I've chosen not to, like, properly review anything the breakfast sandwich does, we're going to move away from him and talk about the commentary specifically by color analyst Matt Stryker. Mr. Stryker has had chosen to, basically publicly acknowledge in a shortened form the allegations against Matt Riddle and basically publicly sweep them under the rug. He doesn't go over the allegations in detail, but there are two like really big things that he throws out there. One, and I did have this as a direct quote at one point, but I didn't bring it out right now. And but basically he said, he says, this is the elephant in the room. And in the court of, most people watching this want Jacob Fatu to slap the taste out of Riddle's mouth. But unfortunately the court of public opinion doesn't really have a place, have a place here. It is not a court that's recognized by any means. And, he's sorry, but that's just kind of the way things go. And then two, which honestly, like, as a person upset me more, was the fact that he flat out said, I don't care what this person did. You don't let a talent like this slide, slip away from you. You don't fire this level of talent. And, that's all well and good, except Mr. Riddle, and again, I'm going to use the word allegation because he's not been tried in the court of law, Matt Stryker put it, the court of public opinion. But Matt Riddle has been accused of domestic violence, sexual assault, hard drug usage, and then whatever we're going to call his TSA incident like 6 months ago. Like, those are some pretty heavy things. And I'm not going to say whether, I definitely have my opinions on it, but for this part of the lecture, I'm not going to say whether those allegations are true or they're false, because what the real injustice is at this point is Matt Stryker's commentary about it. He totally made light of the seriousness of the allegations that have been put forth in the past, and basically just said, it doesn't matter what someone's done, if they've got the skill, like, we're just going, you need to ignore it, and you need to, hire them. You need to contract them. And no, like, at a certain level, like, the baggage a person has is not necessarily worth it. And I think, especially with the seriousness of these allegations, to minimize them in its entirety is horrible. And the way he phrased it made it even worse. That basically said he doesn't care, you should hire them. Like, it's comments like this that make things difficult for people who've gone through, the victims of said, allegations. So the people that have been sexually assaulted and legitimately have been sexually assaulted, these is the reasons, why they don't always go public with with their accusations. This is the reason they don't go to the police or whatever, because people out there minimize it. And either, and we're not going to talk about whether they believe him or not, but basically Stryker, you have Stryker who said, it doesn't matter. Well, considering the statistics where pretty much 50% of all women are going to, have some sort of sexual harassment or assault, and I assume the numbers are going to be higher, but since I don't have these statistics in front of me, I'm going to lowball it, not to minimize it, but I would rather, unfortunately in this case, be wrong on the low side than say a really high number and then have that blown up in my face worse. But this is one of the myriad of reasons why people don't come forward when they are preyed upon, is because people like Matt Stryker are going to minimize it and say it doesn't matter because this guy has used to us. And having Riddle, it's too late, he's hired, it's it is what it is, it caused enough of a stir anyway. And then to add these comments on it on a nationally broadcasted pay-per-view event really it was not good for the company. It was not a good look for the company for a lot of folks. And the world isn't doesn't hinge on the internet. The internet doesn't always represent the common man, common woman per se. But when a big wrestling event occurs, people, I see it. I'm thoroughly entrenched in the internet wrestling community. And so people are like, oh, hey, did you see this? Hey, did you see that? This match was great. This match was not so great. This guy's awesome. You know, they should push this guy. And when it comes to MLW, I don't always get a lot of noise being made about them. Well, this week was different. There was a lot of noise made, and it was all negative. No one praised Kings of Coliseum. All I heard about was Matt Stryker's commentary during the main event. And contrary to popular belief that any publicity is good publicity, if everybody is pooping on your product, I don't feel like that's good publicity. I literally didn't see anybody praise King of Coliseum or talk about the rest of King of Coliseum outside of the MLW diehards such as myself, because everybody was talking about Stryker and his callous choice in phrasing during commentary. And Stryker, then to help fan those flames, went online and basically said, hey, I am a heel. This is what heels do. Yes, heels totally try to justify allegations of sexual assault. That's what they do. And basically said, like, my job is to make you angry. Your job is to be angry as a fan. We both did our job tonight. Congratulations, team. And then allegedly lost a bunch of sleep and decided he was wrong in it, and basically made an apology, which he has now since deleted, by the way. So, you know, Stryker has acknowledged that he is possibly screwed up. But you know who I haven't heard anything from, who I haven't seen anything from, is MLW or Court Bauer. MLW has not acknowledged this and not acknowledged this controversy at all, which usually in most situations is not a bad idea, but like in a case of like this, like someone needs to step forward and issue a statement, whether they're going to choose to throw Matt Stryker under the bus or acknowledge that, like, hey, maybe like we allowed this to happen or put the bug in Matt's earpiece to say something like this. You know, it was in poor taste. We're sorry, or we condemn this, etc. And there hasn't been anything. There hasn't been anything at all. And then they've also kind of doubled down on some of the Riddle stuff. And so, like, this leaves me as a fan in a bad predicament, because, like, I'm gonna throw it out here. Like, I'm not definitely like I've like put it in my show synopsis, but I'm not affiliated with MLW by any stretch of the imagination. I'm not a paid shill for them. I'm just a dude who likes wrestling, and at one point in time thought, you know, MLW was the like some of the best unacknowledged wrestling out there. You know, MLW has done really well, like, the last quarter of 2023, and it was getting to the point, and it was at the point where I'm like, I was back to telling people, like, hey, man, like, MLW's turning a corner, you should totally, you know, you should check them out again, give them another chance. You know, if you're only worried about on-screen product, you know, MLW's turned a corner, and they're putting on really good shows right now. They're doing monthly events that are just certified bangers all around, but if you don't want to shill the money for Triller, like, that's fine. Fusion has been doing good too, and they've been doing a good build up, so you're not missing a whole lot, you know, if you can't see the event, the big events. But things like this makes it hard for me to be able to defend them, because, like, as a person, this upsets me. This doesn't upset me as a wrestling fan, this upsets me as a person. And as much as I've tried to, like, silver line things when I don't agree with them, it's hard to defend this to anyone, especially if no one in MLW is going to acknowledge it. So, like, people are talking about, you know, an alleged rapist being in their main event of, like, their first show of the new year, and now they're all up in arms because commentary publicly swept it under the rug, when really the most prudent course of action was just to not acknowledge it at all. Like, let's just face it. You got Riddle. Like, that's good enough. Don't talk about any of his baggage. Just talk about how awesome he was and how he carried MLW during MLW's relaunch. And instead, we have this potential dumpster fire. A dumpster fire that, again, like, as a fan, is hard to defend. It is hard for me to say, hey, go check this out, when one of the things that's going to pop up if someone like Googles it is going to be Matt Stryker's comments. Or, you know, or Kings of Coliseum, and they catch the main event. Like, especially like how hard we are as a society to try to, you know, try to be inclusive, try to create safe spaces. You know, we have that, and it's hard, and I can't defend it. And where does that leave me? You know, do I continue to support the product? Like, do I continue to be a fan of this? You know, is my continued support of this going, you know, make me kind of complicit in the decision for it to continue? And, like, I don't have the easy answers for that. And, like, that upsets me as well. Like, you know, at my core, I'm doing this because I love the product. Even when it hasn't been great, you know, especially the last year has been overall pretty rough. You know, I've been a fan and I've stuck through it. And Matt Stryker's comments and then the subsequent lack of anything makes me really question that. Like, is it really worth my time? And, like, that's the thing, is, like, as much as I play up, as much as, like, silver line things, like, at heart, like, I'm just a dude who really likes wrestling, and, you know, I want wrestling to be for everyone, because wrestling is fun, and when you have this go down, it makes wrestling a lot less fun. Regardless of if you want to read the dirt sheets or see what the scuttlebutt is online, just to hear that come out of somebody's mouth, it makes it a lot less fun. And I'm hoping MLW will address this, and hopefully they address it. At least there's no way that's going to wipe the slate clean, but hopefully they address it in a way that's positive. Like, I'm not going to call for anybody's job. You know, I'm not going to metaphorically cancel anyone or recommend the canceling for it. But, like, if it were me, I would, you know, put out a statement condemning, basically taking responsibility away from Stryker, you know, say that we allowed this. Ultimately, whatever comes out of our employee's mouth is on us. And we understand that these words were callous and not something that represents the values that MLW puts forth. And so, you know, and then if they're going to choose, they can discipline Stryker, you know, God forbid, they can cut ties with him, like, whatever they see fit on that. Or even, like, say they've taken, like, letting him go to, like, some sensitivity training or something of the like. But, like, the silence, honestly, is just as damning as the words coming out of Stryker's mouth. So, on that downer, I've somehow managed to go as long as, like, the podcast on that, and I apologize. So, I will take my leave. I'm sorry this is ending on a downer, but... Yeah, half jokingly saying the main event was kind of a downer too. But that being said, you know, thank you for sticking through to the end. Thank you for allowing me this platform to speak earnestly with you all. I do appreciate it. Stay tuned for the best ways you can continue to, you know, help support this here podcast. I really do appreciate it. And on that note, you know, thank you guys again. I'll see you all next week. MLW Confusion is a weekly podcast that is written and performed by Rob Kammer and is hosted on Spotify for Podcasters. MLW Confusion is part of the Urban Wrestling Network. You can check out the Major League Pod, amongst other shows, on YouTube at Urban Wrestling NW. The background music for this section is Ruined My Day, performed by Alan Schroeder. If you enjoyed this podcast and like to support, please like, subscribe, and tell your friends, family, and enemies. Leaving a review is also helpful, as word-of-mouth advertisement is very important for small podcasts such as this. My social media links can be found in the description below, but Twitter and Instagram are at TheNovaOfCass, TheNovaOfCass, and Facebook is at MLWConfusion, all one word. If you'd like to support monetarily and help upgrade my equipment, please check out my virtual tip jar at www.kofi.com/Casanova. If you prefer more bang for your buck, you can go to patreon.com/Casanova, where as for as little as $2, backers get access to the podcast early and ad-free, plus other weekly exclusive content such as athome.exe, the Patreon exclusive podcast. So, join the crew that is headed up by Keith Wynn, Alan Schroeder, Alex McCarthy, and The False Prophet, and check it all out. You can also find t-shirts, coffee mugs, and other merch at the Confusion Podcast store on Teespring. For business inquiries such as ads and sponsorships, please email at rzkammerer, that's K-A-M-E-R-E-R, at comcast.net. Thank you all for listening.